It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 50 years ago, the 1964 World's Fair opened in Queens, New York. Artist Andy Warhol was asked to take part in a set of public commissions for the exterior of the New York State Pavilion, one of the main venues of the fair. The images Mr. Warhol chose to display caused a scandal at first. Now they are part of a major exhibition currently on view at the Andy Warhol Museum. Jessica Beck is the assistant curator of the exhibition, and she's here to talk about the story of Warhol's 13 Most Wanted. Jessica Beck, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi there. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This particular work came about at a time when New York City was reportedly trying to rid itself of the counterculture movement. Now, this is 1964, so the Beatles were around by this time, but there wasn't a lot of, you know, unless you count beatniks, there wasn't a whole lot of counterculture, and whatever there was pretty much underground. Mm-hmm. The governor of New York State, Nelson Rockefeller, actually ended up censoring Warhol, who was still a young up-and-coming artist at the time. What was Rockefeller's concern here?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I should start. The show and the whole story has many different components to it, and a lot, as you were saying, was going on in 1964 in the States. But Nelson Rockefeller was running for the Republican nomination for presidency, and it turns out that the criminals from the 13 Most Wanted pamphlet for the FBI, the majority of them were actually of Italian descent.
So when we're talking about 13 Most Wanted, we're talking about let's set the scene here. We're talking about criminals. We're talking about wanted posters that that held a fascination for Andy Warhol.
Yeah. So this was actual police material that Warhol ended up with. So I could tell that part of the story as well. But this would have been the list in 1964 that you would have seen at the post office, and you would have seen it next to the window of the actual criminals wanted by the FBI at that point. And these are real people. I mean, the show opened at the Queens Museum, and a son of one of the criminals showed up to the show and realized that his father's portrait, Connolly, was in the show. So these are real people, real criminals that were wanted for grand larceny and theft and murder. And their faces are what he decided to use for the portraits.
So, and do we know why that is?
So the whole idea started – so Philip Johnson, the architect and the one behind the architectural and design department at MoMA, and we know him here from PPG in Pittsburgh, he was commissioned by Rockefeller to pick 10 emerging artists in 1964. So you have people like Ellsworth Kelly, Robert Rauschenberg, Robert Indiana. These are Roy Lichtenstein. These are Warhol's friends and colleagues, and they're really emerging people at the time. So Warhol had to come up with an idea for this 20 by 20 square. That's what every artist was given to do for the New York State Pavilion. And so he had to come up with an idea. So he's talking with friends at a dinner party, and Wynne Chamberlain, who was dating a police officer at the time, came up with this idea, why don't you do the 13 Most Wanted fugitives, and I can get you police material to make the screens. Hmm. So he ended up doing that, and he ended up using the same contact for later on for his disaster paintings and electric chair paintings, using sort of confiscated police material for those as well.
So, you know, here's a request going out to Andy Warhol. We would like you to create this work for one of the pavilions. Mm-hmm. This is a big moment for New York and for Andy Warhol and for Governor Rockefeller, a would-be presidential candidate, because in those days, and maybe you can talk about this, the significance of the World's Fair at that time, we generally don't seem to be aware today of when, where, or even if there's a World Fair.
Yeah.
World's Fair going on, but back then it meant a lot to the United States in general. So this was a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a moment as well. I mean, the whole idea that this is supposed to be family-friendly entertainment and a real opportunity for people to access technology. Auto had a big, you know, car models were being launched at the World's Fair, and then Disney had a very big presence as well. So, and the motto at the time was peace through understanding and man's place in this changing and shrinking world. So here you have a really family-friendly, warm and fuzzy kind of message, and then Warhol shows up with his mural of criminals, of the most wanted criminals, not just any criminal headshot, but the most wanted criminals.
Did they give him parameters? Did they say, okay, now?
So the whole story, I mean, the fun thing about the exhibition, and I really think people should come out to check it out, is that it's part detective story, because when all of this was happening, it was very secretive because no one actually saw the mural. It was 2 days before, 48 hours before the fair had opened, that it was demanded to be painted over. So we find out much later. The exhibition sort of uses a historical lens to look at this whole drama. But on the surface in the press, one day it's the mural, the next day it's silver, and Warhol and Philip Johnson all twisted it in the press to be that it was Warhol who had claimed to want to paint over it in silver and who was happy with it in the end. And so Warhol kind of triumphed in the very end of the whole thing.
Because he kind of spun the message?
Yeah. He completely spun the whole image and said, oh, it's much more me now that it's a silver monochrome. And it does read that way when we look at it later on. But we know from interviews with Philip Johnson that it was Rockefeller who demanded it to be painted over and censored.
So, and let's – why was Andy Warhol – why did he go with this? I mean, what kind of a statement was he trying to make?
Well, I mean – It's hard to sort of uncover and to think exactly what Warhol wanted.
To get into the mind of Andy
but,
Warhol.
But, I mean, we know that it was audacious and bold. And here he is in 64 doing his first commissioned portrait of Ethel Skoll. He's switching galleries from the Stable Gallery to Leo Castelli. So he's really up and coming, having his first show of the flowers at Leo Castelli, working on race riot paintings in 64. Pushing film empire had happened at this time as well. So there's a lot happening in his career. And he's doing a lot of figuring out what his message is. And he got some front page press, not a ton of press from this immediately, but later on his name was definitely known for this big scandal.
Sure. So here are the people running the World's Fair and Rocky, as Nelson Rockefeller's nickname at the time. Let's do something for the kids. We'll bring in the young artists and they'll paint a nice painting and everybody will love it. And then it's like, whoa. So
yeah.
What did Rockefeller object to specifically?
Yeah, so there's an interview with Philip Johnson who quotes, and I think it's really funny, with Henry Geldzeller, who was responsible for the contemporary section at curated, championed all of these artists, but also with the Met, was a major curator with the Met and critics. So in 82, they have an unpublished interview. You can actually see transcript of the interview in the exhibition. And Philip Johnson lays out very clearly that Nelson Rockefeller was worried about his name and his campaign and was worried that the majority of the criminals on the mural were of Italian descent and he was going to lose that vote. So, just to make it a clear picture. Yeah.
The governor is he has presidential aspirations and he's thinking that a mural at the World's Fair with criminals who may or may not – people may or may not recognize as Italian would cost him the Italian vote all across the United States.
Yeah. So he's very, very worried about his image. And Philip Johnson says in the interview – because all of these – commissions went through Philip Johnson first, and then they went on to Robert Moses, who was in charge of the fair, and then to Nelson Rockefeller. So then at the final, set, it's finally censored at the end. But Philip Johnson says that he thought the idea was absolutely delicious in the beginning, which I really loved that quote. But it's funny, too, because Warhol did react immediately when asked to be painted over in silver. He suggested, actually, to do portraits of Robert Moses, who was in charge of the fair.
Right. So Warhol's saying, and this kind of belies the idea that, let's just paint it over in silver and it'll be great.
Yeah.
He actually was saying, wait a minute. I can do an alternative.
Yeah. And it would have been 25 times Robert Moses' face plastered on this mural. And at the time, Robert Moses was in hot water with the press because the fair wasn't getting the attendance he had anticipated. They spent well over what they should have been spending for this massive thing. And so it would have been another funny move to have this person who's getting terrible press have his portrait plastered on the mural. But Philip Johnson turned that down, and so they ended up going with the silver.
I want to go back to the original mural of the 13 Most Wanted. There was also a second message that Warhol had here.
Yeah.
And what was that?
So, I mean, there's a lot of different components to this, and there's a lot of different things you could read into it. And there's also a bit of camp involved in the mural itself being sort of, is that what you're getting at? The 13 Most Wanted Men is another sort of slang you could pull out from that, because Warhol's working in a circle with, other gay artists at the time, and there is a lot of writing actually about sort of the campiness of that title as well, and the different views and lookings, ways that the men are looking at each other. It's very different than the frontal portraits that he goes on to do later in his career.
That you could interpret that there's a message that that what he's also trying to express in this piece is these men wanting each other.
Yeah. Well, also kind of like celebrity status a bit, that they're attractive. Like when you go and see the portraits, these men are kind of like, you know, the 13 most attractive men or something. We have these lists now. But there is a little bit of that homoerotic nature to it, a little bit of camp as well, I think. Definitely going on, and art historians have written about this as another spinoff of what Warhol's working with, subversive messages, I should say. But yeah, celebrity. I mean, these are men that you see every day. You go into the post office to get your mail or to send out packages, and their pictures are waiting for you and looking. So there's a lot of different things with you could talk about.
Like you may not notice them, though, in the post office. Whereas here, I mean, as was the case with so much of what Warhol did, he puts it there in a way that you can't take – you're so drawn to it. You can't take your eyes off of it. Mm-hmm. Did the powers that be, did Rockefeller, did they pick up on this – homoerotic second message, if you will?
No, I don't think so at all.
Was that part of their concern?
I think the campiness came out much later, and just the way that the history is spun and the way we look at Warhol now through that lens. But no, I mean, it was definitely he was worried about his vote at the time, and he was worried about this sort of darker message of criminals on the mural.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Jessica Beck. She is the assistant curator of the exhibition Warhol's 13 Most Wanted, which is 13 Most Wanted Men, Andy Warhol, and the 1964 World's Fair. It's on display at the Andy Warhol Museum on the North Side. There was a brief time when the original work was unveiled at the World's Fair for a few days. The public could see these images.
Right.
They were on display. What was the reaction from the public to it?
So that's the interesting thing about when you think about the pavilion, it's this massive structure, and you have the Theodorama, which is a round building with no windows, and you have these 10, 20 by 20 murals. And really, it was kind of overlooked by the audience, normal audience member. We now look at it as this act of censorship through the press, but at the time that it was happening, the whole cover-up was secretive, so people didn't really know that
it was there, that it wasn't there, and nobody really noticed.
Yeah,
when it was
gone. Did get a little press that, you know, that it had been painted over, but the message that we see now is a giant scandal is a little bit of a historical lens, and you can actually see we ended up and doing an exact replica of this mural on the outside of the building of the Warhol Museum, which you can come and see. So you get an idea of that scale and what it would have been like. I think often when visitors come through, they don't even necessarily recognize it. So there is something also about this that in context that the scandal happens much later in our historical lens, I think.
And we have at least one of the images on our website. So if you go to WESA.FM, you can see, I guess it's Most Wanted number 2, John Victor G. And you know, he's one eye is closed in this in this wanted poster because presumably he'd been in a struggle at the time he was apprehended. But you know, the way he's looking back at you it speaks to the compelling nature of this Warhol piece.
Yeah. And Warhol saved all of the screens from that. So he was able to produce the portraits, which you see in the exhibition later on. So he showed them in Europe, but they weren't showed in New York at the Gagosian Gallery till 88. So another almost 20 years later, he finally shows them as their complete set again in the U.S.
Was Andy Warhol bitter about this? About, you know, there's what he said publicly, but how did he? What do we know about how he felt about having to have the piece covered over in silver?
Well, I mean, it's through different interviews and stories. I mean, he definitely to spin back around and want to do a portrait of Robert Moses in that way is definitely. I mean, he was probably angry, I could imagine, and but the genius about Warhol is that he was always able to spin everything in an amazing way and was very, very calculated about his public image. So to turn the story around in the end to be a triumph for him, that it's painted over silver, I think is part of his genius. So
what does it also say about him, though, that, you know, when you say spin, it means essentially what it means is not telling the truth. So
yeah.
He was never really upfront about how he really felt about things. Was that kind of his MO in a lot of ways?
I think it's more of a calculated move, really, and really understanding the power of the image and the power of messages and your public persona. I mean, he was very much aware of that. And so I don't think it's necessarily that he was telling lies or it's covering up truth, but being very conscious about image and what his statement would be about the piece.
And apparently he actually took some inspiration from this whole episode, like painting his New York studio over in silver, for example.
It was actually Billy Name who did that. I mean, it was an idea that he was having at the moment, but Billy Name, a photographer and associate of the factory, is the one that covered the factory in silver aluminum paint and spray paint. But yeah, it definitely became a trademark. The Silver Factory was what he was known for and was a very experimental environment. So,
and how much did this piece ultimately influence other artists?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. And I think it's really like the idea of censorship now, which you keep kind of pushing, you know, this to the let's talk about the censorship. And I think,
well, that's probably why, yeah, we're talking about it 50
exactly.
years later, right?
And today that's much more of an issue. You know, you think of like something that happened not too long ago, the hide and seek exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery, where the Warnerovich video was censored and removed from the show, and that was caused a huge scandal in the art world. And the great thing, the sort of interesting thing about this, the difference from now to 1964, is that all of it was very secretive and covered up, and now we have so much social media and everything is really pushed out there and recorded in real time. So if we think about how this would have happened, the same thing would have unfolded now with Warhol. Clearly everyone would have shot pictures of it. We only have a few photographs of the original mural. So that's kind of the difference and an interesting thing with today versus 1964, with a similar thing that would have happened. So
it's a fascinating story. Jessica Beck is the assistant curator of 13 Most Wanted Men, Andy Warhol and the 1964 World's Fair, on display at the Andy Warhol Museum on the North Side. Jessica, how long will this be there?
January 4th, so you still have time.
Great thing to do over the holidays.
Yeah, exactly.
Jessica Beck, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris on the latest demographic marketers are targeting, PANKs. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.